Okay, we're starting on Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph at the third line, but before we start, we're just going to review what we had yesterday. So we started off with the Mishnah, starting from Ayin Bet Amud Bet. We had a Mishnah that talked about the Talmidei Chachamim would, both for their daughters and before they got married with their wives, they would try to kind of clean the slate with their Nedarim. There were different interpretations of the Mishnah as to whether they actually, right, which related to Rami Bar Chama's question in the Gemara, which was, can he be mefer without actually hearing a neder? And from the Mishnah of the Pshat, it sounded like he gets up, derech tamidei chachamim, ad shelo hayta bito yotzame etzlo, omer la kol nederin shenadar b'toch biti, harei hem mufarim. Right? And the same with the Baal, which sounds like he can be mefer a neder that he never heard. So the Gemara explained, in order to say we can't necessarily learn from it, there's two ways to read it. Either it means he got up and said, whatever you did is mufar, and is nullified. And if that's the case, then it shows that he can basically get rid of any of her nedarim without having heard them. The second explanation of that is to say, no, he actually has to hear them. And what he's basically saying is, I'm going to nullify them now, and when I hear about them, they'll immediately be nullified. And then there were some questions, in which case, right, why he's doing that, what the point is. Maybe he'll be busy later, he won't have the time, and then he'll miss his opportunity of that day. And that's why he does it. And then we saw different interpretations also of whether he can actually do that and not have to say anything at the time, or maybe he can just say something, oh yeah, go back to what I said, now it's the time that it's going to happen. Or he actually has to do some form of hafara then also. And then you have to wonder, why did he do it in the first place? Although one thought I just have right now is, sometimes you're worried you're going to forget something. So you say, can you remind me this? Yes. And usually as soon as you say, can you remind me, you remember already. Mm. So it could be that he's doing it as a way of kind of saying, this is what I want to do. So when the time comes, either you remind me, or this is going to help me remind myself that this is what I intended to do.
Saying it out loud helps, but also it's a way of announcing your intentions. That is, she knows, everybody knows, that if this happens,
exactly,
it's already out there.
But then the question is, what if he doesn't deal with it? Right? But then, then it'll be a question. And it could be other people that will say, don't you remember you? And that's part of it. Could be.
That's almost enough for her to decide not to make any nedarim.
It's true. Well, look, it's the same thing with every year. We say hatarat nedarim, we say everything for the following year, and it doesn't prevent you necessarily from making nedarim. You don't always remember.
Or you don't always keep your resolutions.
Well, nowadays we don't. But if you look at the text of hatarat nedarim during the day when they obviously did do nedarim, so, you know, you look and they say every year on the back nedarim and on the future nedarim, you know. So you think, why do they make a text on the back and on the future? Because obviously they're not always going to remember both to the back and to the future. You know, they're not going to always remember when they get to it. That was that whole sugya we had about, if you take the ned, you say at the beginning of the year any nedarim, you know, and then what happens when you make a neder? Is it, you made it and you were saying, even though I said that I want to make this neder anyway, and then the neder would be chal or not, or, right? It's still unclear. Okay, so now Rami Bar Chama has another question. In the end of this question, we're actually going to have an answer, and we're going to see that some mefarshim explain that this answer answers actually both questions. Some say no, it doesn't, but we'll see when we get there. By Rami Bar Chama, Chiresh Mahu Sheyafer LiIshto. Someone who's deaf, can he cancel his wife's nedarim? Im Timtzalom or Baal Mefer Belo Shmi'a Mishum Debar Mishmahu. Okay, so now, is this the end of the question? Right, so it all continues, right?
It stops.
Okay. So let's stop for 1 second before we go on. So what he wants to know is, can a cheresh be mefer lishto? So first of all, what kind of cheresh are we talking about? We had this whole discussion way back in, I guess it was in Chagiga. Is a cheresh, generally, there's two types of cheshim. There's a cheresh that can't hear, that he's just deaf but he can speak, and there's a cheresh she'eino shomea v'lo medaber. Halachically, a cheresh she'eino shomea v'lo medaber is not considered a bardat, he's like a shoteh, and he doesn't have... Right, so most of the Mefarshim say we're clearly not talking about that because then it would be obvious. Some of the Mefarshim say, no, Dafka, he's the one we're talking about, and that's why in the end the answer is going to be that I'm already going to give it away. Mm-hmm. The answer is going to be that he can't be made for his wife's. We saw this also, by the way, by Chalitza. It was the same thing. Right. So now, so the question is, right, so either we say that's the type of Chiresh or Dafka, not that type of Chiresh. And then, and that's because for two reasons, basically. If you say that he couldn't possibly be asking that question, because number one, he's a Shote, he doesn't have Dad, so how could he possibly be Mayfair? And number two, he doesn't have a way to be Mayfair. At least if he can, this we saw by Chalitza, he can be do remiza, right? He can indicate with his, you know, some way. But if he can't speak, you know, and you can't hear, then it's going to be much more difficult. Now, obviously, you can write maybe, you know, but still in those days, that was much more complicated. Mm-hmm. You know, there was much less of an option for him to actually express his thoughts, his intents. So now, so either we say the Baal Mefer below Shmia Mishum Debar Mishmahu. The husband can be Mefer. Why? Because now this relates to the first question somewhat. In other words, either you say we're talking about a husband who actually didn't hear, but since he can potentially hear, right, that would allow him. Aval Chiresh Delav Bar Mishmahu Hainu De Rabbi Zera. Right, now the Chiresh can't potentially hear. And then it would be like what Rabbi Zera says when it comes to a mincha, korban mincha. Okay, we're getting totally off the topic, but this is a very important concept. It comes up by mikvah also. To Amar Rabbi Zera, kol haro'oy lebila, ein bila ma'akevet bo. Kol she'ein ra'oy lebila, bila ma'akevet bo. Okay, this is all still part of the first option. What does Rabbi Zera say? You know about a mincha. We always say this in tefillah, right? Bilula b'shemen. Okay, what does it mean, right? It means it's mixed up with the shemen. Now, if you notice, the word belula describes it. It doesn't come as a commandment. There's no commandment to everything. You have to be bolel, okay? It doesn't say you have to mix it. On the other hand, it says it has to be mixed. So the rabbis see this and they say, so it's not exactly a chiyuv. However, it has to be done, right? It's part of, you want the mincha to be balul. So what do they say? Rabbi Zera says, if it can potentially be mixed, but you didn't mix it, let's say you didn't mix it up, the mincha, but it can, in theory, be mixed, then that's okay. If you didn't do it, okay. The fact that you didn't mix it is not ma'akev, you're bringing this mincha.
Because sense would say the opposite. That if you have the potential, you have to go through with it. If you don't have the potential, right. Then we'd be leaving.
So the reason they say it here is because there's no command to actually do it. Okay. So therefore, they claim that you have to prepare it in a way, let's put it this way, I think this will make more sense to you. It has to be prepared in a way that potentially you could have mixed it. But if you didn't, it's okay. But you can't start out milechatchila doing it in such a way that you know that it can't possibly be done the way you want it to be done. So what would be the example? So they say that there's 60 esronim can fit in a bowl. In a big, if you have a bowl that's like a big bowl, that can fit 60 esronim of solem and can be mixed. But if you put 61 in that bowl, it can't possibly be mixed, right? The whole thing's going to fall over and spill. You ever put too much stuff in a bowl and it's a big mess? So if you put too many things in that bowl, then it doesn't work. So therefore, if you have a big kli that's ra'oi, they just give this example, it depends, whatever kli you have, right? But if you have a kli that can fit 60 esronim and you have 61, so you have to mix them in two separate bowls, basically. And you could put 60 in one, but the other one has to go in a separate bowl. And if you did it and then still didn't mix it, that's okay. But you can't cut off your options before you started, basically. So that's what they're saying here. You can't take a guy who can't even hear and think that he can be part of this issue of being made for the neder. Okay? That's option number one. Okay? Where do you see this by mikvah? So, for example, women who need earplugs or something in their ears and can't dunk without earplugs. So there's this. So you can put in something that if, in theory, the water could get through it, if you stayed underwater long enough, the water could, in theory, get in, then it's not a chatzitza. But if it's something that totally blocks and water can never get through, even though the second she's going to be under the water, it's definitely not going to get through, and that's the whole reason why she's wearing it. But since, in theory, it could, then we paskin that it's okay. Dilma, or maybe the other option is v'shama isha lo ma'akev. It's not la'akev at all. It's just, why would it say v'shama isha then if you don't need to actually hear it? Because that's generally, right, when you find out about it, right? It could have said when you find out about it, but it said when you hear about it, because generally, how do you know? You heard Right? You heard that your wife took a neder. So it's just that, you know, it's almost like Torah, Dibrat Torah B'Lashon B'nei Adam. It's not really like that because we don't actually say generally the Torah's Dibrat B'Lashon B'nei Adam, but the Torah took in a situation that would generally happen, right? And we just talked about that.
Is Livlo mix in modern Hebrew? Would you talk about it for making bread?
Good question. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if they use it in modern Hebrew. I don't think it's a common term.
In cooking, there is the blila.
Livlo.
No, as a noun, the mixture.
The mixture is called the blila.
Yeah. A liquidy.
Okay. There you have it.
Batter. Yeah. Good, thanks.
Okay. So now, Amar Rava. So now we want to find our answer. Here we actually, after a whole daf of having no simple answers, we have a very simple answer. Tashma, Vishama Isha, here's a braita. They quote the pasuk, her husband hears, Prat Leish et Cheresh. That comes to exclude the wife of a deaf person, Shma Mina. So from here we can infer that a deaf person cannot do Hafarat Nedarim for his wife. Okay? Now, so like I said in the very beginning, there's two different approaches here. Okay? Is it that we learn, the Ritva says that we learn here that only a cheresh is excluded. What does the Braita say? Vishama Isha comes to exclude a cheresh. What does that seem to imply? That it would include someone who can hear, even if he didn't hear it. And that would answer Rami Brahma's original question also. But the Ran and others say no. This really only relates to the first question because it only relates to the issue of if you can potentially hear or not, but it doesn't relate to what if you didn't hear, actually. Okay? It's just saying that a cheresh can never be made for a neder when he hears about it. Okay? It doesn't mean, right, when he finds out about it somehow, right? He obviously doesn't hear about it. Maybe he reads about it. Maybe, right, he comes up with some other way to find out about it. And then it comes to exclude him, but anyone else who would find out, right, could only do it when they find out. So it doesn't necessarily answer the first question, although there's a machloka. Ibai Elihu, another question. Can he be made fair to both his wives at once? Okay? Because it says in the Pasuk, Ota. Okay? It doesn't say the Pasuk here. Why doesn't it say the Pasuk here? Let's find the exact Pasuk. I assumed it would be on the page. I'm sure we'll find it on one of the previous pages when they quote all the Pasukim. Fine. I don't know where the exact pasuk. I don't know if it's enough here, but it's Asher Hini Ota, right? He says in the pasuk. Let's just find it. Pasukim in is it Tanakh? Let me go on. Let's just look it up. Okay. One more second. Okay, ve'im biyom shamo isha yani ota ve'fer nidara asher alev imiftas v'ter asher asral nefsha. Okay, so if he doesn't want to keep it, right, it says yani ota. So now ota, what is ota? Ota is singular. So now again, this is all about, right, how do we understand these words? Are they meant to be understood literally or not? So it says yani ota. So, Ota dafka, o lav dafka. Okay, is it specifically just her, or it doesn't mean her? It just means that was the typical case, right? Generally, he's not canceling both wives at once. So it gave you the typical case. Amar Ravina, Tashma, let's learn from here, Ravina says. Ein mashkin shtei sotot ke'achat, mipnei sheliba gas b'chaverta. You can't have two sotot drink at once. What does it mean, two sotot? Two women from the same husband. Now, you can't say, I suspect you and I suspect you and have them both go at the same time. Okay, drink the water at the same time. Why is that? Mishum sheliba gas b'chaverta. Okay, what does that mean? We're worried that she's going to say, you know, if one of them is guilty, like the other ones, what do we really want? We want to avoid her drinking the sota waters because we stick Shema Meforash in there and it erases, and that's like a big issue. You know, we don't want to get into that situation if we can avoid it. So we really want them to come and admit it. But if her wife, the other wife is there, her tzara, as we've called her in Yavamo, right? She's not going to go up and admit, oh, I cheated on you in front of the other one. It's like a, you know, an embarrassment. So because of that,
the whole situation is an embarrassment.
Yes, the whole situation is an embarrassment. But they're saying, you know, the
makes it worse.
Tense relationship between wives, we've already spent a whole masechet on. We know very well about that, and that all the more so is going to basically, you know, is going to basically convince her that she's not going to bother admitting it, and she'll just drink the water. Okay, so because of that, we're not mashkim shtei sotot kechad. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo min Hashem uzeh, that's not the reason. Ela mishum shenemar v'ishka ota levada. Right? The pasuk says v'ishka ota. Okay, here, this pasuk is here. V'ishka. Okay, it actually doesn't say ota. It says v'ishka with a mapik in the hay, right? The dot in the hay, which means he has her drink. Okay, it's in singular. So you can actually learn from both opinions the halacha that we want to learn, okay? Either you learn it from the v'yishka, because it's just ota and it's singular, and there we learn it's definitively singular. Likewise, by us, the ota is going to be singular. Or you say that even according to the other opinion, the Tanakhama here, it's still only one of them. In other words, the halacha is still the same. They can only be one at a time. And just like it's one at a time there, you can apply it here. Although you could say the reason there is not really relevant to us.
It's sort of stretching it in that the pasuk comes up in the situation of talking about sota, and they're only talking about one.
Right.
The fact that they don't actually go on at that point to say, and if it's two, because that's
right, because it's unlikely it's two. Right. It's true. But that's really the question here.
They
do
it all
the
time.
Right. They do it all the time. And again, it's likely that they're trying to take a halacha and not necessarily learn it from a pasuk, but connect it to a pasuk, right? As opposed to that they really actually learn it from here. Okay, new Mishnah. This Mishnah we referenced the other day. We'll see it again, and we'll talk about the two different ways of reading it, the two different nuskaot here. Bogeret sheshata yud bechodesh, v'almana lamed yom, shloshim yom. Rabbi Elezer omer, ho'ilu ba'ala chaya b'mezonoteha yafer. V'chachamim omrim, ein ha'ba'al mefer ad shtikanes l'rishuto. Okay, here we have it, a big machloket. When it comes time, the husband is mitchayev b'mezonot of his wife, even right, they're engaged, they haven't yet gotten married, but at a certain point, the clock starts ticking, right? So we talked about this different things. So in Almana, the assumption is she's been married already. She has her tachshitim ready. She has everything ready. She doesn't need a lot of time to prepare. She only gets 30 days. After 30 days, or really he gets, right? After 30 days, he's got to marry her already. The assumption is a bitula needs 12 months. So we're going to give her the whole time. And that's why we said there was a different nusach here, which is bogeret. Vishishahata yubechodesh, because we talked about the other day that a bogeret dafka doesn't need a whole year. Now, according to what I read up about the bogeret, if she just became a bogeret, she still gets 12 months. But if she's been a bogeret already for 12 months, then she only gets 30 days. And the assumption is for some reason she needs less time. Okay, even though she doesn't have the same thing as that, right? She's like an in between.
She's already been preparing.
Right. Maybe she's been preparing. Could be. So one way to read this is bogeret. Okay, one. Let's read it the way we read it the other day, the way the Gemara amended the text the other day that we saw, which is bogeret vishishata yud bechodesh. I'm not sure if it was the Gemara or we read it up somewhere, but it's a bogeret and someone who waited 12 months, and in other words, and a bitula basically that waited 12 months. So it's a bogeret or a bitula that waited 12 months or an almana that waited 30 days. And then it's a little strange because the bogeret should really be written at the end. It doesn't make so much sense. It should be written with the almana. Okay, in those cases, Rabbi Elazar says as soon as the clock starts ticking for the husband, he should have married her at that point, he already can be made for her nedarim. Okay?
I have a question. But if she's in a state of erusin, then the husband and the father together
are
obligated. So yes, what?
So according to this reading, okay, and that's why maybe you'll prefer the second reading, we'll get to it. According to this reading, what happens is, once she becomes his responsibility to marry, first of all, some people already claim that she already goes, at that point, he basically has a house that's miyuchad for her. She already leaves her father's house. In which case, the father is no longer in the picture at that point. She's basically, since also the husband takes upon himself the responsibility for mizonot. So he basically becomes, right.
So basically, at that point, what the father loses is
The father loses his rights to be made for her nedarim, and the husband gains them entirely on his own. Okay, they're his only. That's what this mishnah is saying according to that reading. And chachamim say, no, that doesn't work. Ein habal mefer ad shtikanes l'rishuto. She actually has to come into his rishut, meaning marriage is the only thing that allows him to have sole rights to her nedarim, and therefore, right, we assume, you can even see Rashi, for example, says, Ein ha'bal mefer yichidi, right, by himself. Because obviously he can be Mayfair with the father before that. A different reading is that it's just talking about a Bogeret and an Almana, and it's not talking about a Betula at all. So it's talking about a woman, okay? Bogeret Sheshata Yubechodesh. So Bogeret, and then you have to say, well, didn't we say a Bogeret doesn't need Yubechodesh? And then you have a question there. But maybe there was a machloket about that, and this Mishnah thinks otherwise. So Bogeret that waited 12 months, or an Almana that waited a month, okay? Then the question is, can the husband, these are generally people that the husband, since she was already married, remember the father didn't have rights to her. And since she's a Bogeret, the father also didn't have rights to her, and that answers your question. I mean, where's the father in all this? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, it's a situation where either she's a Bogeret or she's an Almana, in which case, right, she would obviously have to be an Almana from Nisuin and not from Erusin, because we learned that if she's an Almana from Erusin, she goes back to the father, because she's never married. But only if she's already been fully married, then she no longer, her father can't have rights to her nidarim.
Did we say Bogeret takes her out of the category of the father?
So yeah, remember, if so the father, yes, the father can only do it if she's a ketana or an ara.
So then why does that category just stand alone? A Bogeret.
What do you mean stand alone?
Meaning she doesn't ever have had any status.
Ah, no, because she's a Bogeret. When she's a Bogeret who gets engaged, the husband, right, so can the husband, when she's engaged, cancel a Bogeret's nedarim because there's no father? Right, it seems like he can't, according to that reading of the Mishnah, for sure he can't. What if, I wonder, right, he might not be able to cancel her nedarim.
She's in no man's land?
Could be. That's a good question. I didn't think about
can't
that before.
Can't the father, maybe no I'm confused, can't the father, doesn't the father retain the right to be
as long as she's never been engaged, even if
No. Once she's a Bogeret, she leaves the Rishud of the father. That's exactly what we said. Yesh, Baal Bebeger, and there isn't, right? The Baal can do it when she's... So that Mishnah, did we talk about when... Shabal Mefer Bebeger, Va'aveno Mefer Bebeger. So what did we say there? I assume... Right, it's only once he can't do it. He can't be made for her nedarim when they're engaged. Because here, so Rashi on the Mishnah there says, "Habal mefer bebeger." Because I'm reading about Masechet Ketubot. He gias man velo niso. Right, when the time comes, that's exactly our what we're talking about now. Ochlot mishalo v'ochlot b'tshuma v'chol nederet al daba alam nederet shemachila oyav avichayv mizono ki nederet yachol hafer la. Only once he takes on the chiyuv mizono does he allow to be made for the nedarim. So yeah, an arus and a bogeret wouldn't work until again, according to Rabbi Eliezer, according to this reading of the Mishnah, it would only be Rabbi Eliezer who would say that once he's chayiv mizono, then he can. According to Chachamim, if you read the Mishnah that way, Chachamim basically say no. Even if she's a bogeret, the father doesn't have rights to her, the husband also doesn't until they get married.
And even then, it's only some of her nedarim, the ones that are relevant.
Right, then it's only the ones that are relevant to him, exactly. Okay, so that's a very important reading, whether you read it one way or the other, right? It's a very big difference. Amar Rabba, Rabbi Lezer, Mishna Rishona, Amru Davar Achad. Okay, this we've seen before, where they say, oh, what's said here agrees with a statement made somewhere else, which generally is not the same statement, otherwise it would be obvious, there'd be no need to say it. But what are they saying? That they both have the same mindset, right? The same thing is motivating both of them to say what they say, okay? There's a Mishnah Rishona and a Mishnah Achrona, okay? A later Mishnah, meaning that originally they viewed it one way. As time went on, they changed their minds about it, okay? So the Mishnah Rishona matches Rabbi Lezer's opinion, okay? We're going to see what this is. Ditznan. Notnin lebetula yud bechodesh lefarneset atzma. Okay, Betula, this is where we see what we were talking about. The Betula gets 12 months to where she's responsible for herself still. Higia yud bechodesh, ochelet mishelo, this is what we just quoted in the Rashi there, we were just reading. When 12 months arrives, she's ochelet mishelo, she eats from his food, ve'ochelet b'truma. If he's a Kohen, he has to give her, right, she can now eat truma. She's not allowed to eat truma before. Now, if you remember, truma is kinyan kaspo, right? Anything that he, so to speak, owns. So now, if you remember, she actually, midoraita, he really is supposed to give her truma. But there are two reasons why he doesn't give her truma. I don't know if you guys remember this. But what are the two reasons? There was mishum simpon. Do you remember that? Remember the simpon? No, you don't remember? Okay. So there's two reasons. One is the simpon, that we're worried that he's going to find some mum in her and when he gets married. And because of that, what's going to happen? He's going to say, oh, I don't really want to stay married to you. And this is an interesting assumption because they're going to say that this doesn't apply in this case once he's chayav in mizono. Because what's the assumption? Okay, this is very human nature. Okay, he's got a whole year till he has to marry her, right? How many times have you gotten to, this happens certainly in my house all the time, where you're supposed to do something and then as it gets closer, all of a sudden you finally start thinking about it and you realize, oh, what a mistake and we shouldn't be doing this and it's like a little too late to cancel or whatever it might be, right? It's only like right when you get close to it that you're really starting to think about it. So that's the assumption. When he gets close to the time he's going to marry her, then he starts checking out a little bit better. Like if you remember, we learned to the Sin Ketubot about he checks out with her relatives, he starts asking questions about her. So that would be either the time of Mizonot, where he's chayav already, it's been a year and he's about to marry her, or when he actually marries her, right? Let's say he doesn't wait the full 12, or, you know, it doesn't pass the time where he's, right? He does it right at the 12-month time. So at that point, he might start to check out, and then he might find something, and then he'll want to not get married to her. So if that's the case, the point is that the Erusin, yes, it's a whole kinyan, and it's much more than our Erusin nowadays, but they're much more easily broken, and therefore it's only when it gets down to it, right? If you think about also the Shidduch world and, you know, people who don't really know each other, you can imagine this, like the year, okay, so they're not really with each other. She's in her father's house, he's in his house. They don't have so much to do as it gets closer to the wedding, so, you know, they might start, you know, looking into things a little bit better. So now, that's what we're worried. And then in the end, if he never ends up marrying her, then she should never have eaten the truma in the first place. That's one reason. Another reason is that since she's in her father's house, you remember now?
During Yibum, I don't remember.
No. Because she's still living in her father's house, if they allow her to eat truma, what will happen? It'll be complicated, right? People might accidentally eat truma in the father's house because they're not kohanim, and she'll be eating her food, and people will take from her food, and they'll end up eating truma. So based on those two reasons, right? So here, higia yu bechodesh. So since he doesn't marry her at that point, but since we assume, number one, she's no longer in her father's house because we talked about just before that he's already miyached labayit, so you don't have that issue. And it's already, he should have married her, so he must have checked into her already. We're not worried about him finding some mum and not wanting to marry her. So, ochlo mishalov ochlo b'truma. So again, mija oraita, she really could eat truma, but mija rabana, they were gozer for those two reasons. Aval hayabam, here we get to the yabam. Eino ma'achil b'truma. But the yabam can't give her truma. Now here there's a machloket about whether it's mija oraita or mija rabana, okay? Some people say that the yabam, actually, okay, so again, we're talking about a yabam who, it got to the point where he was supposed to marry her already, and he didn't yet, but he should have. So now, we say he can't give her truma. So most of the opinions say he can't give her truma because she's not kinyan kaspo. She's the kinyan of her husband, right? She's the kinyan of the first husband who died, his brother.
The kohen.
Right. And he's a kohen also, but she's not his responsibility yet until he actually marries her. In other words, the kinyan was done with the husband. There's no Erusin when it comes to Yibum, right? Because here, at least, you could say there was Erusin. There was a Kinyan. So, therefore, that's one way of looking at it. Rabbeinu Tam Dafka thinks, which I think is a radical opinion, that she's actually Chayav, he's Chayav Midoraita to feed her Truma. But Midorabanan, they were Gozer that he shouldn't. I don't know what his reason for being Gozer that he shouldn't, but I thought that was an interesting twist on it. You know, it seems more logical, the first option, but nevertheless, it should be pointed out that he thinks it's chiv midoraita, but midorabanan, and they said he shouldn't. So hayabam ino machil b'truma. Achshav, asta shisha chodeshim b'fnei habal, v'shisha chodeshim b'fnei hayabam. Let's say she was engaged 6 months, okay, for the husband, and then the husband dies, and then she's 6 months before the yabam. So altogether, she has 12 months. Ba'afilu kulam b'fnei habal chaser yom achad. O kulam b'fnei hayabam chaser yom achad. Okay, this is just another thing about the yabam. Even if she did most of the time with the husband, or, you know, and she's missing, it doesn't matter. She's still ain't ochelet b'truma. Zo mishna rishona. Okay, that's what they originally thought. Now, what do you see here? That She's ochelet betruma. The main line is the first line. Hi yiyu bechodesh ochelet mishalov ochelet betruma. So what do you see? She's basically as if she's married to him, just like Rabbi Lezer says. It's the Mishnah Rishonah was talking about truma, and our Mishnah Rabbi Lezer was talking about hafarat nedarim. It's the same thing. If he can feed her truma, you know, again he can feed her. He can also be made for her nedarim. Soon we're going to see that maybe not. Maybe truma and nedarim are two different things. Now we're going to learn what the Mishnah Achrona is. Beitin shel acharehem, okay, but the later Beitin, Amru, this is still, by the way, this is all in the Tanaitic time period. There was the Mishnah Rishonah, which was the earlier Mishnah time period, and then the Beitin shel acharehem, Amru, ein ha'isha ochelet betruma ad shetikanes l'chupa. Okay, so now the Beitin shel acharehem would obviously match Chachamim's opinion, ein ha'bal mefer ad shetikanes l'reshuto, same thing. Amar le Abaye, Dilma Lohi. Now, maybe that's not necessarily the case. Ad kan lo kashmiina Mishnah Rishona, ela lamecha betruma derabanan. Aval nedarim deoraita ema lo. Okay, let's go first in this direction. Okay, we're going to go in both directions. But now we're going to say that when it comes to the Mishnah Rishona, where they allow her to eat truma, why is that? Because what did we say? Midoraita, she can eat truma. Because she's kinyan kaspo. Midurabanan, they were gozer for some other reasons. Therefore, when it comes to the durabanan, they're going to say, fine, you're already supposed to have married her. She's considered your wife. But when it comes to hafarat nedarim, which is a halacha midoraita, that the baal can be made for nedarim when they're married, well, that is only going to be once they're actually married. Aval nedarim deoraita emalo. Okay. Ba'ad kan, now let's go the flip. Now let's take Rabbi Eliezer, who says it by hafarat nedarim, but wouldn't necessarily say it by truma. Now you have to do the opposite logic. Ba'akan lo shama leila Rabbi Lezer ela gabe nedarim. Why? What's unique about nedarim? And this is like a whole key to our understanding, this whole thing about husbands canceling wives nedarim. Kidi Rav Pinchas mishmei derava. Like Rav Pinchas says in the name of Rava, da'amar kol hanoderet al da'at ba'alahi noderet. Nedarim is a unique thing, because women only take nedarim with the haskama of their husband. Okay? So, right, what does this mean? This is like a big, big line, okay? Let's just continue the logic for a minute, and then we'll try to get into this a little better. Aval truma, afilu midrabanan, nami lo achla. Okay, so now what is it? Even though truma is only drabanan, truma has nothing to do with her, I mean, it does have to do with her relationship with her husband, but it's not like she's eating the truma al da ba'ala. In other words, he's saying, once he's chayab b'mizonotea, so then he can be made for her nedarim, because anyway, she would only make nedarim that her husband would agree to anyway. So therefore, we can allow him to cancel it if he doesn't like them. Whereas when it comes to truma, his dad is not relevant in the case, and therefore by truma, we would say only when they're actually married does he have rights to it. Okay, so what does this mean? Kolan oder al da ba'ala unoder, and you can get to some strange conclusions from here that the Ran's going to raise and reject. I want to go into it a little bit. So first of all, the Rashba says, it's very interesting, what's Rav Pinchas saying? This is the way, it sounds like he's saying that this is the way of women, okay? Which again, you can jump to conclusions, like if that's what women did then, it doesn't mean that's what women do now. I mean, obviously the halacha is not super relevant in our day anyway. But it's one of those things that it describes a particular society and the way people function. And what the Rashba says is really interesting, which is since most women did it like this, so the Torah came and made, like it was a gzeret hakatuv based on what women were doing those days, which is a very interesting, you know, what you do with that is, you know, obviously opens a big petach to say basically, well, if now most women don't do that, then maybe this halacha is no longer relevant. No. It's true this halacha is really no longer relevant because we don't really have relationships with husbands and wives like this. I mean, I don't know if nowadays there have ever been situations where husbands have done this, but I imagine it's much, you know, less common, if not common in this, you know, never happened. So anyway, so he says very interestingly that since most women do this, therefore it became gzeirat hakatuv. Okay? Now, what does this mean? The Ran jumps from this, or he says other people jump to this. I want to read this inside. Okay, look at the last Ran. It's about eight lines from the bottom. V'ika de'yalfe mehacha. There are some who learn from here. De'misha nadar al dat chavero. If you make a neder, right? Because what are we basically saying? She's making a neder assuming that her husband's going to agree with it, right? In other words, with his haskama. So let's say I make a neder with one of your haskamot, okay? Not my husband, but a friend. Hare ze yachol lahatir nidro shelo al pi chacham. Just like this. As they're saying, that since what's this basically saying? That the Torah, the way people understand this, now you're going to see the Ran's going to attack this, but the Ran's saying the people concluded from this that the Torah was basically giving a script for a situation where someone took a neder with the haskama of someone else. The Torah gave the example of a husband and wife and a father and a daughter, but likewise, it can be applied across the board to anyone who takes a neder with the haskama of his friend. His friend can cancel it without having to go to a chacham. Okay? So now skip down a little bit to the next line toward the end of the line. V'zeh etzli shigigat hora'ah. Okay? This is a total miss. They misunderstood. Da'af agav da'amar da'aldat ba'alahi noderet. Okay? Even though we say that that's what Rav Pinchas says, right? That she's doing it al dat ba'ala. Afilu hachi tzarich ba'al sheyafer la ba'oto lashon shekitzba la Torah. Ugzeret hakatuv hu. He says, this is gzeret hakatuv. What does that mean, gzeret hakatuv? It means, like, don't ask questions, don't jump to conclusions. This is a specific, unique situation that the Torah said we do it here and here only. Umishum hachi ein kol lishanot shavim bo. You can't just apply it in other situations. Okay, we'll skip this a little bit. And then skip down to the next line toward the end. Mishum hachi zachta Torah labal b'aparat nederet. Mishum daldat ba'alahi noderet. Okay, hilkach kol shi noderet al da'ato chayla ha'gzeret ha'katuv da'amu rachmana. Okay, aval noder al da'at chavero. De'lo chad pe rachmana midi. The Torah didn't relate to this in the slightest, right? Didn't say anything about it. V'adai lo matzeh mefer. Okay? But he does say one thing, which is mihu hecha da'at ne behedya v'amar hareini noder im chaveri rotzeh matze chaver lemishrele. In other words, if you said specifically, I'm going to take a neder if my friend allows me to, then it works. You know, then the friend can just say, I don't allow you, and the neder's gone without a sheilah chacham. But certainly don't jump to the conclusion that if it was, you know, there could be situations where it was obvious. You didn't say it explicitly, I'm doing it al da'atcha, but it was clear you were doing it al da'ato. Okay? Just like the wife. She doesn't say it explicitly, but it's clear. That's what they're saying. It's implicit. And that, what's so amazing here? So a few things, right? Number one, he's saying this is very specifically, right? Only related, but it's clear that others didn't think so. And how you view this, it's very important in terms of how you view this whole concept of the father and the husband having rights to her nederim. Is it because the assumption is what the Rashba says, which is fascinating, which is the assumption is, right, the Rashba based on Rav Pinchas, is that that's how women took their nederim. They did it, and no women would do things on their own without the haskama of somebody, right, unless at those small points where they're totally independent, like she becomes a bulgar before she's married, or she gets divorced and then, you know, from marriage or the husband dies. At that point, she's more independent, have more confidence maybe, right? She's already been married now. Anyway, or it could be also not just that, she just doesn't have anyone anymore. In other words, we always talked about that once she's married, she doesn't fully go back to her father's house, like a partial, right? Even with Truma, depending if she has kids, she doesn't have kids, whether she can eat it or not. So anyway, that it's really based on the fact that that's the assumption of what was going on in her head, that she did it with the intent that, you know, someone else had to agree to it. She wouldn't do anything on her own. And that's why they have rights to cancel it. And then, here's the machloket here again, whether you say that the opinion that the Ran disagrees with is a legitimate one or not, which is the Torah giving this example only for women? Or is this just an example of someone who would be no Daryl Dad, somebody else, in which case it would apply across the board? Again, if somebody didn't explicitly say it, but it was implicit, then they might be able to cancel it without a sheilah chacham.
It's interesting that they really don't want nederim to happen, and at some level the assumption is we have to deal with it because people spontaneously make them. It's not that you can just forbid it.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that if you're working on the assumption that people make nederim as an outburst or without thinking about it or without having thought it through or really meaning it, you can't necessarily also make the assumption that they wouldn't be saying it unless somebody else agreed, because there's a level of thought there that we assume isn't happening.
Yeah, fair. I think that's a very good question on this, on Rav Pinchas, which is, you know, I think it's very smart. What you're saying is basically, if the whole thing is that you did it in a rash moment of heated moment, then you're certainly not thinking, oh, well, I'm only doing this if my husband agrees. Yes. But I think maybe what his thinking is, and again, you have to go back to a different society, that a woman knows in the back of her head that anything she commits to, her husband, you know, it has to be within the framework of what her husband would agree to or what her father would agree to. And that, I think, we can understand in a certain type of logic. I mentioned this a while ago when we started Nedarim, or at some point, that I read up on this and I saw that in the late 1800s in America, that women could be lawyers because their husband could cancel their contracts. Hmm. And even in the late 1800s in America, you know, women weren't allowed to take contracts without their husbands agreeing to it. So,
but that was a much more formal, rational situation. Being a lawyer and signing a contract isn't the same thing as exclaiming.
It's true. It's true. It's true. But what does it show? It shows the husbands.
The
women can't do anything. They can't be ultimately responsible for anything. So even if they say something in a rash heated moment, they know in the back of their minds that they can never be fully responsible because someone else is more responsible for their lives than they are, or just as, you know, or. Right. It's scary. I mean, when I read that in the late 1800s in America, I mean, we're not talking about 2,000 years ago, you know, 1,500 years ago. We're talking about, you know, much more recently, and in America, land of freedom, of, you know, very, very interesting. So that just puts it into perspective a little bit about what all this is all about and what the...
Women didn't have voting rights in Switzerland until the 1970s.
1970s? Wow. Wow. That's crazy.
Or 60s, yeah. Wow. Very, very late.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. Good. Interesting end.